My name's Philip Iona, but everyone calls me Ippy, as usual. I mean, this is, you know, I'm born and raised here, right here in Waimea. Lived here most of my life. I graduated from the Cordon Bleu in San Francisco, the California Culinary Academy. My family had restaurants, so my dad had a plate lunch restaurant, just like similar to this one, the, you know, Ippy's Hawaiian Barbecue. And from when I was a little kid, up for years up until I was, after I graduated high school. And my mom's Italian from New York. So when I was a freshman in high school, my mom, she's not a big fan of rice and macaroni salad. She doesn't like the fact that people put mayo in macaroni, you know? But she wanted to open her own Italian restaurant here. There wasn't many Italian restaurants here, so she opened an Italian restaurant up. So I grew up in both. I mean, my dad's Hawaiian plate lunch and my mom's Italian restaurant. She had that for over 13 years. And so I grew up there. As soon as I graduated high school, I already knew what I wanted to do, went straight to culinary school. And then after I graduated culinary school, I worked in San Francisco for a while, came home. My first big break was on Food Network Star. So that was Food Network Star season 8. I was 22, I think, at the time, 22 or 23. After that, let's see, after Food Network Star, I made it to the finals, made it towards the end, but I was too laid back. You know, it's a product of your birthplace, you know what I mean? Like, they say, oh, you're too laid back, so that's fine. After that, I opened up a place called Ippy Swine Barbecue, which we're now sitting in the second location. I know there's no camera, so I'll explain as much, you know, as I can. So we opened Ippy Swine Barbecue in Waikoloa. It's in a small little spot in the food court. It was a way to get back to my roots, you know, get back to my dad's plate lunch place. You know, I grew up there. I love that kind of food, the simple, you know, homemade, simple, you know, good food. And then from there, I opened the Three Fat Pigs. By that point, I'd made it into the Forbes 30 Under 30 list, which was, for me, that's one of the biggest, best things I've ever, I you know. So Forbes 30 Under 30, it's the, you know, top 30 chefs, or not even chefs, you know, it's the top 30 people in the food industry under 30. It's shakers and movers, people opening businesses, doing things, you know. Also, I don't know if it was around the same time I did Canada's International Iron Chef. We won that one. That was a huge surprise to us. We went in there thinking, you know, we're the underdogs. I think they invited me. It's put on by Canada, by Toronto. It's a competition with, you know, chefs from all over the world that come together and compete almost like bracket style, like a playoff style, you know, and the final two compete at the end. It was a total of 5 days of cooking. And then we won that. And then from there, I started a new spot called the Core Table, which you've been to. And finally, after everything, I closed down my sit-down restaurants and opened up this place, Ippy Swine Barbecue, which 2 months ago. Just started about 2 months ago, so.
What, man? How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, good, thanks, man. Yeah, how's everything going so far?
That leads us to here. You know, I've been doing this since I was, you know, there's different types of chefs. There's people that are born into it that don't have that option. I don't want to say don't have the option. People that are born into it, and then there's people that do it because they love it. I'm both, you know, like I was born into it and I loved it, and so I stayed in it. I do everything I can to, you know, to make myself better in this industry.
So how did your mom and dad influence you?
Well, that's, you know, obvious. Both of them had restaurants, you know.
But in the ways of cooking.
Like, oh, okay. So, both my parents, actually, they're not chefs. So my mom and dad, they're both accountants, actually. They're accountants, graduated as accountants, but they went, you know, they both happened to get into the restaurant business. So I think it's a little different. I'm, you know, they're both amazing. They can cook. My mom is, everyone in Waimea calls her the soup goddess. Like, her Italian restaurant was unreal. So I think just, it's weird, you know, having an Italian mom and a Hawaiian dad, you learn, they're two such strong cultures, as you know. The Hawaiian culture, we're all about food, family, everything like that. And then my mom's Italian side, it's the same thing. Food, family, you know. So I think those two things play a huge influences when it comes to cooking. Growing up, just being able to, you know, learn how to cook, making pizzas, pastas, soups, all this stuff at my mom's place. And then with my dad, at his restaurant, there was this lady called Masayo, this old Japanese woman. And she was like, she really was the one who made me want to become a chef. You know, she's, she grew up in a town where, like, they made their own tofu, they made their own mochi, like, they didn't have electricity, none of that, no running water, all this. And so she was the one who, and she's like a legend in this town, she's, she was the one who was, cooked everything at my dad's restaurant. And she gave me a Chinese cleaver, I think I was like in the fourth grade or some fifth grade, gave me this Chinese cleaver, and I was cutting chicken katsu, and the way I cut it, she's like, oh, you're going to be a chef, you know, and I was like, oh, okay, and she's telling everybody, no, no, this boy, he's going to be a chef, you know, and it ended up, you know, we called her the kitchen magician was her nickname. I kept, you know, kept cooking with her, learning from her. Now you can actually, we have on our menu, it's called Masayo's Beef Stew, Masayo's Stew, we have her name up on our wall, you know, she's a huge, huge influence. She just passed away about a month ago. And she was always a huge influence for me with food.
Sorry for your loss, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it was weird, actually. The day after she passed away, I came in to open the restaurant, and I could hear the music blasting from out in the parking lot. And I came in, and Aloha Oi was playing. Aloha Oi is like our goodbye song. It's until we meet again, you know. It's like every funeral, every time, that's what you sing, you know. And I'm walking in, and it's blasting on that. And we, all of us, me, my mom, my dad, it's just like chicken skin, you know. Like the hair rose up. We're like, oh man, is that her, you know?
So your earliest cooking memory would be with her, then?
I would say, actually, my earliest cooking memory, like real cooking memory, is The Little Italian. I made a series of cooking videos called The Little Italian. I think I was 12, I think, at the time, and my cousin would film it, and I did all kinds of crazy, nothing intense. I mean, looking back on it now, I mean, I was doing homemade Caesar dressings and Fra Diavolo, you know, I mean, I guess intense stuff for a little kid, but real simple things, and it was called The Little Italian. I still have those videos, so that's the earliest cooking memory I can think of.
You should put them on YouTube.
Yeah, right. I have them on when I did Food Network Star. I sent them to them, and they used them for a few clips and things here and there. So on YouTube, I think on my bio video for Food Network Star, it's on, you know, you can see it on there.
So are you part of the local farm-to-table movement?
Because
we know how Merriman, who is one of the huge, key
he's
people,
the founder.
The founder, really, yeah, of the Hawaiian Island version.
Definitely. I would say yes and no. I am, in the sense of, I'm very involved in the farming community here. My products I get are usually from farmers here. I would say 95% of my produce is from farmers. Our stews and stuff, we use Hawaii beef, you know, Hawaiian beef. So I would say yes, but I'm also, you know, I'm friends with the farmers. I know them. I've grown up here. I know them, you know. So it's, you know, it's kind of a automatic thing, you know. It's not even about farm to table. It's about, I know these guys. They have an amazing product, and the price point is right. So I use their product. So I guess in that sense, yes, we do use a lot of that at farm to table. A lot of our stuff comes from here. I mean, the farmer who I get all my lettuce and cabbage and stuff from, I get my lettuce and cabbage from him, and his brother picks up my slop for his pigs. You know what I mean? It's like, it's very connected. So I think it's more of a community.
It's more the Ohana of the islands and the spirit of Aloha.
And that's what it is. We do have that connection. And I would say yes and no to that question.
Then we'll just answer the next question. So other than your parents, any other chefs that influenced you?
Yeah, so Masayo. As far as famous chefs or stuff, Emeril Lagasse, who's in their late 20s, early 30s, like wasn't influenced by Emeril when they were young, you know? I guess it was one of those things. There were a handful of like true celebrity chefs at that time. We talked about one earlier, Ming Tsai, Emeril Lagasse, Ina Garten was kind of coming out at that time, you know, I mean, just there are all these big time chefs, but Emeril was the one for me. I used to walk around my dad's restaurant with the towel on my shoulder. I would be damning stuff. We still, to this day, if we throw any kind of like seasoning or anything on top of the plate, we're bamming it. Like, we're bam, you know? Like, my mom does this crazy, like, old school. She chops up parsley, right? And she wants to put parsley on everything, chopped up parsley on all her plates. It's like the old Italian.
Authentic Italian.
Authentic Italian. And I always tease her. I always call it bam. Like, that's so. Now, if there's chopped up parsley, we use, it's called bam because we take it, bam, we throw it on the plate, you know? And like, you get half of it on the floor, part of it on the plate.
More artistic expression now.
Much more. But now I do a little different things, you know. But hey, there are a few times where I'll bust the bam out, you know, and we'll throw parsley all over it.
You have to bring back your old heritage.
Yeah. It's only memories. When you got those big rim plates, you know, you have to have a bunch of rim on the plate so your parsley can get thrown on it.
Nice cut of Chinelle
Fredo. Oh, it's the best. A little lemon slice and some bam, you know, forget it. Take me right back to my childhood.
So what are your current food endeavors?
So right now, obviously, like I stated earlier, you know, we just opened up this space about a month and a half ago, maybe 2 months. So this is something, Ippy's Hawaiian Barbecue, it's a plate lunch place. It's something that I'd love to be able to take all over the country. My goal is after this spot gets up and running on its own, I want to head out to Texas and try to open a spot out there. And from there, just branch out, you know. A lot of people know about L&L. It's a Hawaiian plate lunch franchise. And they have hundreds of locations in the country. And I just think that being like spreading this type of food where everything is homemade, marinated, you know, all our sauces are made from scratch and things like that, I think that has to be shared with the world. There are a few more Hawaiian play lunch places popping up, some like, you know, chains that are kind of competing with
like
them.
Ono.
Yeah, Ono Hawaiian Barbecue is big in California right now. So things like that, you know. Yeah, exactly. You know, for me, I always believe like at my dad's restaurant, everything we did was from scratch. You know, I would say the only thing that we don't do from scratch is our brown gravy. That would be the only. I mean, how do you make brown gravy? It's good. You know what I mean? Like, I can make you the best country gravy. I can make you an amazing bacon gravy. You name it. I can make some amazing. But the locals just. That brown gravy is like
it's a can of Campbell.
No, we do a little bit more than that, but it's one of those things where it's a very, you know, hard thing to replicate. We do a version of it here and down in our other in White Kalua. It's a pork gravy, so we do bones and we make a broth, use that, and then we use that broth with the mix, you know. I mean, it kind of gives it a little deeper flavor. We have so much pork bones anyway from all of our things that we cook, our kalua and all that stuff, so we take it a little further and we do a pork gravy. So, you know, anytime I can make something not vegan, we try to, you know.
Well, you know Carry Beyond Burger.
Yes.
On your...
Yep.
So you're trying to get into the...
Yeah. My mom's a vegetarian. So, weirdly, she became a vegetarian about 8 years ago. The story goes, she had her Italian restaurant. You never see an Italian usually that's a vegetarian, you know? So it's funny because she had her Italian restaurant and I had the three fat pigs at the time. A buddy of mine brought in this 200-pound fish, an ahi, beautiful ahi, and for some reason she came into the kitchen and literally everything just like changed right there. She's like, oh my gosh, she's like, look at that fish, that poor fish, it's so cute. And literally from that moment on, she's been a vegetarian, and it's not because she's against certain things or whatever. She literally says it's because the animals are her friends, you know, like. So she'll still like, she eats chicken broth, she eats stews, she just takes the meat out. So she's not a real vegetarian, you know. She's the Italian fugazi vegetarian, but she, you know, it's literally comes from an actual good place of, because of the animals, you know, not so much of a health and a California vegetarian, more of a, you know.
But you have a barbecue place. Mm-hmm. The Three Fat Pigs were more of a
gastropub
focusing on pig.
Yes,
everything
of
pig.
Course, everything pig.
From snout to tail.
Snout to tail.
Poet Table was more your I'd say Hawaiian style.
Yeah, it was, my goal was to bring a place where people could sit down and eat local food that I grew up eating and still get served, have that, you know, restaurant environment where you get, you know, you can sit down, have a drink, bring your family. I tried to bring the price point down. It was stuff like oxtail stew. We did different Simons on the menu. We had, we did one thing that was really tasty. It was lumpia. So that's something here in Hawaii. It's a Filipino, it's like a Filipino spring roll, I guess, if you will. And they fill that with meat. And we did a lumpia that we filled with adobo. So it's like a vinegar, like a vinegared pork. So things like that. It was a play on local, local food, you know what I mean? I took local food and tried to take it, took the BAM out of it.
I'd say like a more like a fusion type thing.
Exactly. So one of the things I would say, I hate the word POV, you know, your point of view and stuff, but Food Network has rammed this down people's throats, this point of view thing. And when I ended up coming up with mine, it was, I told people I use Pacific ingredients with modern European techniques, you know, meaning, you know, I would roll homemade pastas, we would do different, you know, different types of sauces and sous vide and different things like that, but using ingredients that I grew up here eating, you know.
So then what are your any personal struggles you've had as a chef?
Oh gosh, how long is this podcast? I think every chef does, you know what I mean? It goes from, you know, there's struggles as a line cook, obviously. There's struggles as a dishwasher. You know, everyone has their own types of struggles. Once you make that leap into opening your own restaurants, it becomes a whole different type of struggle. My big struggle down in my sit-down restaurants were me not being able to get, like, into the food as much, you know. I couldn't have my hands in the food as much because I was having to take care of the front of the house, having to take care of little things that I normally wouldn't. Here I tried to dial that back here, and that's, you know, I came down to this, you know, ordering at the counter, making it more personable, doing so that I can get back to the food, you know. I can be in the kitchen every day, I can be cooking, I can be doing that. So I would say, aside from the financial, aside from the lack of sleep, the headaches, you know, all of those things, owning it, you know, it's so easy at the end of the night when you own a restaurant and you have a bar and things, it's so easy to just go right to the bar when you're done with work. I mean, that in itself can be a struggle for some chefs, you know. For me, it's like, there's so many little things that can throw you off track. Just staying on track is important, you know.
Any like substance abuse other than alcohol or
in the restaurant business?
Yeah. For you?
Oh, for me, no. And I never would say I'm a whiskey guy. I would consider myself more of a connoisseur. Like I won't, you know, I tend to not drink after work and things like that. I love whiskeys. I collect them. I'm, you know, and you don't really, when you're collecting whiskeys and you're not taking shots of them, you know. So it's I guess
nice,
you know,
Coquimba and a nice,
what do we call it, a classy, you know, those, just some people might think, oh, he's a classy drunk, but no, I've never really had any issues with that. But I'm saying, as far as restaurant, you know what I mean, that can be a big thing in the restaurant industry alone. Substance abuse is a huge problem, you know. It's a big situation. We employ every walk of life in the kitchen, you know. I think, who was it, Anthony Bourdain, you know, when he referred to the kitchen like a pirate ship, you know, it's 100% true, you know. It's, if you can work a line, I don't care what your past is, you know, if you can keep up with me, I don't care what you did in the past, you know, where you came from, doesn't affect me. What affects me is your work ethic, how are you showing up to work, and what you can put out, so yeah, I would say struggle-wise, you know, I know I trailed off there, but I would say struggle-wise, it was, you know, the financial, the long hours, all those things affected me. What affected me the most here on this island was, you know, it's such a small island, and we're, you know, I don't know if the island necessarily is there yet when it comes to gastropubs, or, you know, I was doing things like crispy pigtails with pickled watermelon rinds, and, you know, we're doing Big Island goat cheese and like sour cherry preserved spanakopitas, and things that we're doing.
Pushing the boundaries of what the local flavors were that people weren't accustomed to at that time.
Exactly. And the Big Island, we're an island where the people that visit this island are usually family oriented. It's very rare you have a young couple that's like, hey, I want to go to Hawaii, let's go to the Big Island. You know, it's like,
unless you're golfing.
Yeah, you're golfing, or if you're into, you're a hiker, into nature, things like that. That's big here. We have volcanoes, we have great beaches, you know, things like that. But it's a very family-oriented island. People come to Hawaii, and one of the things I learned real fast is when you book a vacation in Hawaii, you're going to turn your mind off, right? I mean, nobody wants to come to Hawaii. You're coming to Hawaii to lay on the beach, sip a drink, and turn your mind off. There's no museums. There's no Museum of Natural History. There's nothing like that. People don't come here to gain those type of things. They want to relax,
but
you know?
But we do have on the island, volcanoes.
100%.
Place of refuge.
100%. We have lots of natural, amazing things to do, but I think when they come here...
The culture of history of Hawaii is based on this island.
Huge.
And if you want to learn... It's a great way to also educate kids.
Big time. Oh, I agree with you. 100%.
And volcano is just a exquisite place in itself.
Unbelievable.
And if you've never been there, you should.
Definitely.
You should. And the place of refuge, too.
Yeah, City of Refuge.
The island.
It's crazy. Just the story behind the City of Refuge, all of that. It's amazing. But what I mean is, you know, in order to eat a meal that, for example, like when you go to the French Laundry or any of these kind of high-end restaurants, you know, mentally, you have to be prepared for that meal. Like, you don't just go into the French Laundry like, I just want a burger, you know? Like, you know, you don't go into even Roy's, you know what I mean? Like, there, it takes some, you have to kind of be ready for that experience, you know? Roy's, he does a very good job of bringing the island, laid-back island vibe into his restaurant, you know? So, I think my biggest problem was I was expecting people to come here, and I was like, oh, I'm going to teach them about this, or I'm going to show them this, and people want to come here, and they want to relax, they want to not have to think about their meal, you know, they want to go out to dinner and not have to think about it. And when I say that, I'm not speaking for everybody that comes to Hawaii or to the Big Island, you know, I'm talking about a big percentage of them, but not everybody. But it's something where they want to come and relax. They'd rather just have a simple burger, a steak, like with the ocean view, than to have to go into a restaurant and have a 6-course meal where, like, the chef has everything planned out. And, you know, I mean, I think some people really want it, but for the most part, the Big Islands, you know, the people that come here aren't there. Not yet. Soon.
Are you planning to, like, open, like, your gastropub?
You know, I think eventually I'd love to eventually go back to doing that type of food. It keeps me entertained. It's the stuff I love doing, you know, but...
And it pushes your boundaries and keeps you educated and trying to get new ideas, new techniques down.
Yeah.
And
it's fun, too. Me and my sous chef would... It was so much fun changing
up. I don't know if you, like, watch anything about Noma.
Noma.
The number one restaurant in the world in Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is, like, every month or so, they let their chefs have free range of the kitchen.
Yeah.
And they can make anything they want. And you have every chef there in your place, and they try it. If it's good, you get great feedback.
Yeah, I love
that. Maybe a way, something that you could do with your chefs there, just to push the boundaries and let them have fun. If it's great, have it. And
100%.
If it's great, you can have it as a special.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They can get a little more recognition and all that.
Yeah, well, that we do that here. I mean, my special board here is a combination. So I actually usually I'm only putting up one special a day, and my sous chef, he'll put up one. The guy who's prepping for us here, actually, he used to work at my dad's old Hawaiian restaurant. He's been with us now over 14 years. So he does stuff. You know, he just did a chicken mushroom yesterday. My sous chef did adobo a couple days ago. But, you know, and they do things like that. But obviously here, you know, it's a plate lunch restaurant. We're more focused on flavor and convenience, I guess, you know, bringing those two together. Everything we make is homemade. You want it to be flavorful and to satisfy, but you also, you know, customers come in here expecting not to wait more than 15 minutes, 10 minutes, you know.
The plate lunch is basically the Hawaiian fast food.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the original thing. It's like came out in the early, was it 40s, 50s?
Yeah, during the plantations and bringing in, you know, that's when the bento started, the bento box, and...
Yeah.
It's a fusion of all the different cultures that were here during the plantation days. You know, you have Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Hawaiian. You have them all influenced in one in dishes, you know. The musubi, which is invented based off of the omusubi, which is, you know, that triangular rice ball you get as a for the Japanese food. And they came to Hawaii. The Japanese wanted their omusubi, but we had spam. They didn't have ube, their little salty plum they put in the middle of their omusubi. So instead, they took spam. They put spam in there. Boom, you have a musubi. You know, teriyaki, it's a big, you know, teriyaki, the actual teriyaki sauce and stuff that we do here is a little different, you know, than, you know, they used what they had.
They adapt.
They adapt, exactly.
That's what you have to do, and no matter what.
Yeah. And that's what plate lunch, that's how it started, was born, and now it's morphed into that, you know. We have, on my menu alone, you have kalbi short ribs, major Korean influence. We have yakitori chicken, teriyaki chicken, major Japanese influence. You know, we have Simon, another Japanese influence. Adobo, I told you my sous chef just made adobo. It's a Filipino influence, you know. So we have all these different, you know, we do kalua pig, lomi salmon. We do all the Hawaiian stuff. So I personally love that. You know, I've been really enjoying bringing this type of food to people. I never realized how much how much I missed it until I started doing it again, you know, being able to not be so stuffy in the kitchen, you know, having, you know, being able to put out, it's been refreshing, I should say, I guess, you know.
A little more laid back.
A little more laid back, yes.
You're on a little more island time instead of being on in a sit-down restaurant where you have a reservation this time, you have to be here, here's our wine list, here's our... These are our specials.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I'm a little more laid back. You know, I'm able to feed a lot more people, you know, than your, you know, just your high end, you know, sit down, you know, clientele. I think this type of food is making a comeback. You know, look at all the chefs. I mean, there's so many chefs now that are giving up their white tablecloth restaurants for fast casual, you know.
Food trucks mainly.
Yeah. Big one is Shake Shack. Shake Shack's worldwide now, you know. I mean they're huge now. I mean, all because, you know, Danny Meyer was like, I wanna open up a little shack that just makes good burgers, you know, and step away from the white tablecloth. So I think it's a new
thing.
Or
we have another person, a local guy, head of the Monolani food, an executive chef, he left and created Village Burger.
Yeah, Village Burger, Pueo's, which is Chef Babian from who's executive at the Four Seasons. He's a big time chef at the Four Seasons for years, went and opened Pueo's.
And that's now still big in like sit down fancy restaurants still.
I would consider Pueo's.
You have a dress code.
Yeah.
You have reservations.
True.
And it's everything's a la carte.
True. I think it's mostly because I go there. I always get there at 12 o'clock at night, and I'm getting there. They do a burger, you know, burgers and pizzas. That I'm doing that late night thing. So, yeah, no, I see. Yeah. But yeah, Village Burger does a great job with that too. And the noodle club that he does, like, you know, it's... Yeah, I think it's a new style, a new thing. A lot of chefs are doing it. I enjoy doing it because it's part of my culture too. You know, it's what I grew up doing. So.
So what about having you, like, having a food truck?
You know, we've considered it. Here, the problem is here. You know, food trucks survive the most in walking cities. You know, cities where people are constantly around.
But you said earlier about Texas.
Yeah.
Why not do?
Texas could. I mean,
why don't
you know, there's certain cities that would work.
Why don't you try doing one in Texas, going to LA area, SoCal?
Yeah. Yes,
just see what
trying them out.
Just instead of using it as a basis idea and see what the clientele would take.
Yeah, building. Oh, that's
and
a great idea.
Then if you want to go there, then you can get a massage.
Yeah.
But that's what a lot of chefs do now. Instead of having a big place first, they'll do a food truck. So
see what the crowd likes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that idea. Yeah.
So, one of the last questions. How are you educating the public with your cooking and food?
So again, like I said earlier, I didn't want to use that word. I was going to say, you know, it's hard educating people on this island when it comes to food. I didn't want to use that word, but, you know, I think...
specifically the plate lunch.
Well, I think the plate lunch, you know, here, we're just showing that there's a way to do it. You know, you can do plate lunch. you don't have to do plate lunch, and it doesn't have to be from a can. It doesn't have to be from a jar. You know what I mean? You can make homemade plate lunch. Everything, all of our sauces are from scratch. Everything we do is soaked at least 2 days. You know, we're soaking in Korean sauces, teriyaki sauces, sesame. You know, we have all these different sauces that we soak things in. I think here we're just kind of showing people that you can do local plate lunch. And it all started, the way plate lunch started was you had these people that actually cared, you know? I mean, they put love in their food, you know?
Just like how your father taught you.
Exactly.
You're bringing back basically what your father taught you to the public with a little modern twist.
Yeah. And I use his recipes, you know? I mean, everything we do, I'm still using the recipes from Masayo, from my dad's place. Like, I'm still using those original recipes. Like, back in the day, that's... People, I mean, plate lunch was that. Plate lunch was real, you know? I mean, you're not, you don't get glopped on, you know, they're not glopping on fake sauces and stuff. They're opening up from a can and teriyaki sauces from a jar. Like, it used to be homemade good food, and I think I'm trying to show that we bring that back. And there's a lot of plate lunch places that are like that. You look at the real popular plate lunch places in Hawaii, where we're talking like Rainbows and stuff in Hilo, or in Oahu, Rainbows Drive-In, and all these older, and they're
Cafe, you know, 100 in Hilo.
Exactly, you know, they're making their own food. It's not, you know, it's not commercialized. It's not, you know, it's homemade. It can be good still, you know. And I think that's what I'm trying to show people here is it can be plate lunch. You can get your $12 plate, $10 plate. It doesn't have to be $30. It can be $10, and it can be homemade, and it can be good. You know. I think that's what I'm trying to show people. Like, you can eat. You don't have to bust your wallet. You can eat good homemade food for a good price. Don't let anybody tell you that we have a short foods that should be expensive or good food should cost you. Like, everyone, I hear this saying where people say, "Well, I'll pay for good food." Really? I'll pay for good food, but I'll also get good food for cheap. You know, like, I mean,
some of the best food I get on the island they are from when I go to the farmers market.
Yes, yes, sir.
And I think that's what people don't think about. They go to the farmer's market, oh, but we're here for some. The food is there. Mm-hmm. You're getting people that are trying out things that we don't get anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And
Street food. Street food is some of the best food in the world, you know?
Yeah. You have a place in Waimea here. Mm-hmm. On Saturday mornings, you have a place that does raclette, mm-hmm. the Swiss cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And it is phenomenal. They're the only place I've seen it in Hawaii. There's like one or two places in California that knew that. Yeah. That's and you don't get that. It's so unique. Mm-hmm. And they're doing great now because people are finding out that people will like it.
Yeah, you don't have to spend a lot of money doing to eat good food. You know, I think that's a big thing that I'd like people to know. You know, you can get homemade good food from a spot like this and not have to spend a lot of money, you know? Food's not expensive. It shouldn't be. I mean, don't get me wrong. Foie gras is expensive. But I always tell everybody, if you put two dishes in front of me, one dish is, you know, a poached lobster with a foie gras, and you put a little, you have
caviar foam.
Something, you know, something really, really, really nice. And then next to it, you have, you have one of my favorite, a teri loco moco, you know what I mean? Or a kalua pig loco moco. If you tell me, okay, pick one of them and eat it. Of course, I'm going to take the lobster. Me personally, I'm going to take the lobster and foie gras and stuff. Now, if you held a gun to my head and you said, eat one of these, I'm going to shoot you after. I'm going to eat the loco moco because it gives me, I feel good eating, like it comforts me, you know, it's
comfort
like,
food.
Yeah.
But that's Hawaiian comfort food, though.
Yes, yes.
And that's what you're selling, that's Hawaiian comfort food.
Exactly, Hawaiian comfort food, yeah. I love that, yeah.
So last question. What would you say for inspiring chefs?
Oh, man. Inspiring chefs, I would say, you know, work, show up. You know, that's a big thing. Show up to work. It's not going to come overnight. You're not going to, I think a lot of chefs, as we said, food's been glamified or you see it through a certain type of lens and they get discouraged because they, you know, it's not easy work. It's hard work. So I would say, know that it's something you want to do, enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, don't do it, you know? I mean, if you don't enjoy it, don't do it, because you're not going to do it for the pay. You're not going to do it for the glory. You're doing it for the love. So if you don't enjoy it, you know, don't do it.
So expect long hours, very little pay.
Yes, and there will be a payoff. I mean, if you're good enough, there's always going to be a payoff in the end. Food has so many avenues you can go. You're in the food industry. I'm in the food industry. Like, there's not just... You don't have to just be a chef nowadays. I met a kid at my restaurant 2 years ago, and he tells me... We're talking, and he's like, oh, I just wanted to compliment you on the barbecue sauce. He's like, it's tangy, it's this, it's that. And I was so blown away. This kid's like 10 years old. And I'm like, oh, it sounds like you want to be a chef when you grow up. And he's like, oh, no, absolutely not. He's like, I want to be a food critic. And I'm like, that's, you know, there's so many different avenues that you can go, like, down at in the food world. That's not just a chef. So if you're in the food business, you're an aspiring chef, and you don't like working line, or you don't like doing certain things, don't get discouraged. There's other avenues you can go down. You know, you can love food and not have to be in the kitchen all the time. There's, you know, so I would say if you love it, you know, expect to work for it, which is like anything in life.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Star Trek or Star Wars?
Oh, man. I would go Star Trek for sure, 100%.
Favorite character?
Well, I was a jock, I was all this, I love Kirk, you know, but with all these new ones coming out, this new Star Trek Discovery and stuff, they're introducing, I mean, I see Spock in a whole new light now, so who knows, but there's a lot of new things coming out, I might change over from Captain Kirk to one of the, you know, someone else, we'll see.
Fair enough. Yeah. Thanks.
Of course, thank you.